She's a 3-time Grammy winner, and he's an Oscar winner and a 7-time Grammy winner. We're here today on Crew Call with Dua Lipa and Mark Ronson, who are behind this year's hit single, Dance the Night, on the Barbie soundtrack. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro.
Mark and Dua, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Great to be here.
So tell me about how the two of you met. Dua, I know very early in your career, you were sending your demos around London and you were reaching out to managers and producers and whatnot. And I'm just curious, did you reach out to Mark early on?
I didn't. That was a little bit too far-fetched of a dream for me to reach out to Mark early on. I was very much like Googling management companies in London, and I had no idea how to even go about doing something like this. So I think for me, I thought, okay, I'm going to post some covers on YouTube and on SoundCloud, and I'm going to try and see if I can get seen or heard. And at the same time, I was just like meeting people and going into the studio with lots of friends and just making demos and kind of just crossing my fingers and hoping that someone might hear something and might want to work with me, basically, was what was happening when I was really, really young. But me and Mark met, I guess it was when we worked on Electricity.
Yeah.
Well, we probably met before that at something.
Yeah, but I think maybe because you were working with some of the people that I love collaborating with, like Andrew Wyatt and Emile Haney. And I remember everyone talking about how great you were. And then Diplo and I had the demo of this song Electricity, like sort of rough, like mainly just the melody and the track. And I was actually in the studio with Andrew Wyatt, who co-wrote Dance the Night with us, and was working. I was just like, man, who would sing this song? Like, who has that great soulful voice it could take? Because there's like gospel-y chords in the track as well. And obviously I wanted somebody who was like kind of big, like a pop star, you know? And Andrew had just been in this writing camp with Dua and just said, you know, it's great, Dua. And I remember I had your number somehow, or maybe Andrew asked if it was okay to give you the number. Yeah. And I said, like, hey, we got this song. I'd love you to hear it. And it kind of just went from there.
Mm. Yeah. And that was when you had a studio in LA. That was like before you came back to New York for a bit. You were working out of like Zelig.
Yeah. And I will tell you, there was never a day that more boys showed up to the studio accidentally than the day that Dua came in to record the vocals. It was a Sunday afternoon too. And there was like the farmer's market that shuts down all that whole area of Sunset. So like people really had to battle through to get there. And I remember just like, what are you doing here? They'd be like, oh, I just came in to heard you were doing a session with Dua today. That's the truth.
That's very funny.
Was it like the Beatles in reverse? Was she like running in front of the train station? Was there a whole mob after her?
Pretty much.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you guys about each other's superpowers later on in the interview, but you know, Mark, to pound out a good song, it takes them about 10 writing sessions. She does it in less than half that. Could you expound on that?
I think that certainly not in the case of Dance the Night, because that was probably one of the longest I've ever worked on any song because we wanted to get it so right. But I think that, listen, I'm sure there's songs that Dua that you've written in half a day that are incredible. And then there are some that just require and need and that extra special care for whatever reason. It doesn't mean they're better or worse. It's just every song is different.
I think, in my opinion, like when I think about it on my first two records, I probably didn't actually have the confidence to go back to a song and really fight for it in the way that we did for Dance the Night. Because I felt like whatever I got in the day, in the session, that was probably the best it was going to be, maybe like a couple of tweaks or whatever. Whereas the more I've worked, the more I like hone into my craft, the more I write, the more I spend time with incredible artists and songwriters and producers, the more I learn and I feel more confident that now I never want to let, you know, something good go to waste. And so when we fell in love with what we had in terms of the melody for the chorus, we then went back and we worked backwards and we're like, all right, the verses were good, but we can get them better. So we went back and we rewrote the verses for Dance the Night to make it perfect, to make it up to par with the chorus. Then we went in and started rewriting certain lyrics in the chorus to then have that, you know, marry in a way that felt like we were doing it justice. And on top of all that, we had this mega movie that with the whole cast that was having this massive dance number. And you're like, all right, we can't let them down. We can't let Greta down. We can't let ourselves down. Like every part of this has to be 110%. And I love the process of doing that with Dance Tonight. And I think it also just takes like a little bit more confidence to not give up on something and really, really fight for every tiny bit of the song. And I did that a lot with the new record as well. It's just like you kind of just take your time to, I don't know, really carefully curate every little bit. And that's what we really did with Dance the Night.
Can you tell me about the earlier version of Dance the Night? Was it, I'm always fascinated by songs like, for example, Billy Joel will have, you know, We Didn't Start the Fire was a very slow song before it became a very kind of snappy song. Was, I mean, obviously Dance the Night was always meant to be a disco number, but was there something distinctly different about it in its early iteration?
I guess a part, like maybe we sped it up a little, like the original, you know, string instrumental.
I think
that we upped the tempo a bit, but like for the most part,
and also like the first batch of the lyrics were really, they were really good, but they were just about a bit more like leaning into the existential crisis and a little bit more of like this sort of like, when the world's against you, this is what you got to do and you got to get up. And it was, they were cool. But then every time we'd watch it, especially as more footage came in of the film, it just didn't make sense with like Margot Robbie, like everybody smiling and glittering. Like, of course it was feasible. They were listening to a Dua Lipa banger in Barbie Land, but just it. And then when we started to open it back up, Dua and Carolyn especially started to treat the lyrics almost like score. Like I remember the one time that I got chills and there were a couple when Margot, this was the second time we were writing it, when Margot goes like that and goes to run over and Dua just was improvising like freestyle. She's like saying something about come along for the ride. And then that's like what all great choreography does. And that's why we love TikTok dances and whatever else. There's something magical that happens when what's happening on screen and what you're hearing completely match up. And that's what great score does and whatever else, but especially the lyrics. And then Dua started to get like so into it that there was even like this, it's so subliminal, but
when, guys, turn the music up.
Yeah, right when Margot goes like that.
And she goes like this and they put their hands up and then it's like, come along for the ride. We had like just little things to match up to the movement and the moment. And we had the big screen set up in the studio and we would watch it and write it. But yeah, I guess we did treat it quite like a score in that sense.
Mark, let's go back to the beginning. George Drakoulias reaches out to you, texts you, says Barbie. Was the film being shot then?
I think they were 2 weeks out of shooting. I think they were like, so they really like were through pre-production, but that they were about to do this, start rehearsals for the big dance number. So yeah, I think they were 1 week out of rehearsals for the dance number. And I obviously wasn't aware of all this when it was going, but now that I've seen interviews with Greta and Margot, like that was the first time even all the cast met to really bond. And, you know, there was this sort of, I spoke to Greta and she's like, there's this big dance number. It's the end of Barbie's best day. It happens early in the movie. I really want to set the tone for the film with this just like wonderful disco modern banger, you know? So I started to work on the track instantly because I read the script and I was just so in love with it. And I loved everything about Greta and her vision. And I think that even in the early portion of it, I kind of had Dua in mind as sort of this like goal, like, you know, I didn't had no idea what she was doing, but just to ask if she would be involved. And I started working on this track and I sent the earliest demo sort of skeleton to Greta so she could start the dance rehearsals. Cause at first they were like, well, just tell us what tempo it's going to be, or maybe another song that it might sound like that we can rehearse to. And I was like, that's bananas. Like, if you guys start rehearsing, but then at the same time, to have the pressure of us being locked into whatever I did on that first thing as well was like, okay, this better be good, even if it's just a demo. Cause, and that was what happened. And then once they started rehearsals, I sent it to Dua and I just said, hey, there's this movie. It's fantastic. I think you're going to really love it and you're going to love Greta and we'd love to have you write the song.
And then Dua, in terms of writing the song, tell me about that. Tell us about your writing process, Dua. You have a writing partner? And what do you write on? Or do you write on piano? Do you have a diary of lyrics? Tell us about your process.
So my process really varies. I guess for Dancer Night, like Mark said, you know, he created this incredible instrumental and the score for the film, and we were pretty much we were married to it, so that was what it had to be, and we had to just you know, create a disco banger that matched the energy of the instrumental melodically and lyrically and with the theme of the film too. I do have a writing, like a notebook that I've got every single song that I've written over the past 3 years with me. So that's kind of like my relic, my good luck charm. And yeah, we went into the studio and we really kind of spoke about the premise of the film. We spoke about Barbie's best day ever. We spoke about the fact that, you know, Barbie essentially has this existential crisis and her whole life goes upside down from that moment on. And it's like, all right, how do we create a song that becomes this turning point for the film that in a way narrates what's coming next, but at the same time, you know, has glitzy Barbie-esque disco elements in it with an underlying story. You know, you've got lyrics in there, which is like not one hair out of place, which is very Barbie. She's very perfect at all times. But at the same time, she's kind of going through all these thoughts about death, and it's the juxtaposition. And what I like to do best is dance crying. It's really my favorite genre ever. And I think the idea of having that juxtaposition of a really, really happy moment, but not only are there underlying thoughts of death, but at the same time, you know, you're trying to juggle this idea that Barbie's not trying to upset anyone. She's having these thoughts. She doesn't know who to go to. She's trying to smile through the pain. All these things are happening and it's all very confusing. And how do we narrate that? And basically we just started on melody. It was me, Caroline, Andrew, and Mark. And we just kind of sat for a while making melodies that were really cool and unique and different, but had a modern disco element to it. And we initially wrote a song that was, well, the melody stayed the same, but the lyrical content was a little bit different.
We leaned heavier on the crying than the dancing, I think. Like, yeah, it was a little bit more of the existential crisis. So it was like, we knew we were like foreshadowing the film too much, like for where it was.
It's funny because I had read that, oh, it's a song about dancing throughout the night despite enduring sadness. And I've heard this song a million times and all I hear is glee and happiness. I'm like, where is the sadness? And I went back to the lyrics and I'm like, oh, there it is. It's like very faint. But what I love about the song is it, you know, from the moment the needle drops in the film, it screams summer. It screams Barbie. Getting that, was that lightning in a bottle, Mark? Like that, it just, it's such a perfect song.
Well, I think that, like, what was really great about the way the movie came to us in our first initial conversation with Greta is, like, I don't think I even knew what studio was involved or what label the soundtrack was going to be on. Like, it was so, felt so low key that it, I think that it gave us this chance to create in this sort of free way. I think of the pressure, if we thought of how big this movie was supposed to be and that Atlantic had their second quarter projections, like, I would have just probably frozen up. And I like the fact that Greta seemed to, like, imply, I remember at some point that there should be, like, some musculature. And there usually is with the most of Dua's big songs too. Like, it should be, like, heavy. It's not syrupy pop. It's got some, like, grit. And the chords are like bump, 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 bump. Like, they're not even the most obvious. They're not sort of ABBA-ish chords, you know? Not no knock to ABBA. I fucking love ABBA. But yeah, so I think that at some point along the way, Greta started to, like, I think maybe tease, like, some language, like Barbie smash summer hit or something, you know? But that was just her being a little tongue-in-cheek. But I think the fact that we were just trying to make the best thing. And then, you know, obviously when Stu became involved and Carolyn and Andrew, we started to write this song that we all felt good about. Then it moved to a bit of a place where, like, oh, this, maybe this could be a hit, but you never know that anyway. That's, I feel like I certainly never know that kind of stuff.
No, you definitely never know that. And in more instances than not, like, I think because it's, you know, a lot of the music that I make is essentially pop, it is like the chords are maybe a little unconventional or the way that it sounds, but that's why it just takes a little time. Like, they're like slow to grow and then they just kind of stick around for a while. And I think it's, I don't know, I think the more you listen to it, you hear different things that kind of become maybe infectious in that, because they're not so assuming, I guess, like immediately. As a pop record.
Dua, what does Mark do well as a producer?
Mark's knowledge as, first of all, Mark has an infinite knowledge of music, like around the globe, over the years, through time, like.
She's also saying I'm really old.
Well, I'm just kidding. Not quite.
But I am.
Right. but just, I think, Mark's knowledge and Mark's experience of music, the way Mark has grown in the industry, the way that he is, I don't know, he just knows so much about sounds. He knows what goes well. He's so intuitive with sound. And I don't know, it's just, I think it's just obviously something that comes very, very naturally to him. I think if there was anybody that I would trust with anything to do with music, it would be Mark. Yeah.
And Mark, was this, I know, you know, you won an Oscar for Shallow on A Star Is Born. Was this the first time that you had to curate an entire soundtrack?
Yeah, absolutely. It grew out of this song. And then we wrote I'm Just Ken. And I think at that point, I'm sure, listen, there was Atlantic were involved with Kevin Weaver and there was going to be a big soundtrack, but who knew how much the film was going to be music driven, you know? And then I think by the time we worked on those first few songs, it became clear that Greta and I, like, we had a good language and I understood I could kind of see what she was wanted and I liked all her choices. So then I think it just was pretty organic that I ended up coming in to help oversee the soundtrack as well. But yeah, no, I've never done anything like this. And it was like some stuff that was really fun like this and some stuff that was just like not as sexy at all, just like 4-hour admin calls, you know, twice a week with Atlantic and having to bother Kevin from Tame Impala. I'd be like, can you send the goddamn demo in, please? Like, you know, there were definitely like things that were just like, but I was so kind of in love and in step with the whole movie at that point, I was just kind of down to do whatever, really, just to whatever the holes needed filling on different songs and different across the board.
You had Barbies all over the studio, different yeah. kinds of Barbies. They were just like all little, like, I don't know, inspo toys all over. That was
it's
cool.
The first time they're not here, I notice. Maybe someone else is here. Anyway, yeah.
Well, you know, given that, you know, this is a very philosophical, you know, movie about female power and independence. And that said, what did Barbie mean to both of you in writing the song and also Mark in building the soundtrack?
I don't think Barbie meant a whole lot to me. I mean, obviously, I moved to America in 1983. So like Barbie was, of course, everywhere. I'm pretty sure my sisters played with it. But it was probably pretty tied into my experience of moving to America. It was like Barbie and He-Man. But but I think probably like a lot of people, like this version of Barbie will be the way that people think about Barbie for quite a long time. I mean, obviously, Mattel is like one of the biggest brands ever. It's not to say that they necessarily like were slumming till this movie came along. But my Barbie now, when I think about it, I picture Margot Robbie. I think of like this beautiful film. So I think I had this script and it was so great. And that's what Barbie, like everything that was propelling me creatively probably came from that vision.
Mm. Barbie for me, I remember having Barbies, but for me, it was like my form of expression was to cut their hair and change their outfits. And I never wanted my Barbie to be really pretty, or like, I just didn't really love the way she was always so perfect. Like for me, it was like coloring the hair, drawing the face, sometimes taking the head off, an occasional leg. It really depended on like how I felt in the moment, but it was just like whatever I wanted. It was just, you know, a fun toy to like really express myself, which is why I feel like the film also kind of gave it a whole new meaning for me, because I felt like I related to Barbie way more than I did when I was younger. It gave me, it was like, oh, but that is the Barbie that I, you know, feel like I recognize much more in my childhood. And the way that I saw it was, you know, it being perfect. So it kind of needed to kind of break through some kind of something else. Like, I don't know what I thought when I was younger, but the idea of stereotypical Barbie wasn't my favorite, you know, Barbie per se.
Are both of you working together again?
I think we're always like, I mean, I just love working with Dua. She's just, especially on this song, because this was the first song we really wrote together from soup to nuts. And yeah, I hope that we'll always work together, because I love the way she writes. I love her voice, and she's just a good friend and all of it.
I was trying to get to more specifically DL3.
I thought so. I thought that's what you were. What you were digging into.
Are
digging
there any
into.
Fingerprints of Mr. Ronson's on DL3?
No.
We're both just like leaving
no,
out.
No, but it's an amazing album.
We Every haven't got anything for DL3, but we have been writing some stuff that might find a home.
Every time we would get back in to write, we would end up being like, okay, well, how about we spend Monday fine tuning the Barbie song, and then we'll work Tuesday through Friday on something for DL3. And then we'd just open up the Pandora's box to Barbie and just keep making it better. And then it would just turn out that every time we got together, just came with like tinkering and making the song as good as it could be.
Yeah, we were really, really focused on Dance the Night, but we will always be working together. So I'm sure there's a lot more in store for me and Mark musically. At least I hope so.
Me too.
Dua Lipa and Mark Ronson, thank you so much.
thank you so much, Anthony.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.